This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures. And joining me from California is author Diane Sabel Donahoe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay.
You have a very interesting background. In addition to being an author, you have a background as an artist in oils and other media, and you traveled extensively. How has that affected your desire to write and to publish a novel?
Well, I fell in love with this village of Carcassonne. It's really a city. My husband and I went on a trip, and we went with a group of people. And they stopped a great distance away from Carcassonne so we could see the outline of the city. And I just totally fell in love with it. I thought it was something out of a fairy tale. And then we went in and spent the day there and then left and went back to our ship. About a year later, we went back to France and we spent some time in Carcassonne thinking that I would like to write a book. And we went to Carcassonne, stayed in a hotel, and spent 3 days there. It was just charming, and we went around outside the walled city. So we were outside the walled city and inside the walled city. Well, then when I went back to San Francisco, my husband told me about a baby bird that was crying, and that left an impression on me. I saw the bird, so I combined the story about a bird and the village of Carcassonne, and it evolved into this book, which now highlights the children more than the animals.
The title of your book, The Valentine Children's, is that the name of the family, the Valentine, or is that an illustrative word that you used?
No, that is the name of the family. They're the Valentine family, and they have 6 children, and they live on a small farm outside of the city of Carcassonne.
Beautifully illustrated. You, being an artist, I'm sure, did some heavy searching to find the right illustrator for your book. How long did that take, and what is your opinion of how the illustrations turned out? I think they're charming, personally. But
yes, it took me a little while. I went on the internet, and I went alphabetically, and I put stars next to the illustrators I liked. And I felt that this illustrator was appropriate for the book. And by having an art background, I was able to determine she would be just right.
Are there any key messages that came through in your writing of this book?
Key messages? I really don't understand what you mean, Jay.
Well, is there anything about the book that a child or an adult reading it will pick up as maybe a lesson or something else is of importance?
Absolutely. Children and both adults who are interested in learning a new language and learning about a foreign culture will love this book.
And it is life on a farm, small farm in France.
Yes, it is. It's a charming book, and the children are absolutely wonderful. I've developed the children in a great way. I've spent time with them, and actually I've fallen in love with the children. So I do love the book.
The book itself, the Valentine Children's Summer Adventures, how long did it take you to come up with the concept, the imaginative storyline, and also to put it into print?
It took me, I had the idea a long time ago, and then I was involved with my artwork, and I also did some interior decorating, so I was very, very busy. And it started out with a picture book. I was going to do it for very young children, like 4, 5, and 6. And then the more I wrote, the more I felt it was for older children. And then I kept writing and writing, and then I couldn't stop. It was sort of an obsession. The children became so wonderful to me. I had to keep bringing in new adventures with the children.
You have 60 pages. That may have taken a while to complete. Did you start with an outline, or was it just the creative process just kept flowing from your imaginative?
It just kept flowing. I just would get up in the morning and just start writing, and I think I shocked my husband because he said, I didn't know you could do this. And I just kept writing, and I sort my father's major in college was journalism, and maybe I get it from him. What happened was it just developed into this more intense book, this exciting book for children.
What do you think is the most adventuresome thing that the children are involved in the book that will really grab the readers?
Well, there's a horse named Puccini who really loves opera and helps the children search for a missing and lovable and beautiful cat. There are two cats in the book. There's a bird and there's a horse. So there's four animals. Each animal brings an adventure.
Beautiful. And why did you decide to write this book? Was it because of your experience in France in the charming city of Carcassonne?
Yes. Getting back to the question that you asked, it took me about 2 years to write the book seriously, you know, to really get into it and say this is the way it's going to be. And I'm sorry, what was your question again?
I was curious about your decision to write. Was it the charm of the countryside and of France? What really drew you into this project?
I'll tell you. I think children should start learning a language when they're very young. And also, I remember the first time I went to France when I was single, I was very uncomfortable because I didn't know that much French. And I felt that if the children fell in love with the story and kept reading it over and over again, as you do with your favorite book, and kept looking at the illustrations and kept going over the words, that eventually they would feel very comfortable with any kind of French, and they'd be anxious for my next book.
Wonderful.
Which takes place a few years later.
Is it also in Carcassonne?
Yes, it's a story of the children again in Carcassonne in the early 40s. To mid-1940s. This takes place in 1938.
Ah. Was there a lot of research that you had to indulge in order to get all of the facts or the parts of the story that were factual correct?
No, not that much research, because we did do the research by going to Carcassonne, and we do travel so much that I didn't need to do a lot of research. I'm doing a lot of research for my next book, though.
And it's going to be the same setting, or is it a different setting?
It's the same setting. It's with the children, and they're still on the farm for a while, and it's the wartime, so things are kind of different. They're older, and things have changed. It's very interesting. It's probably more interesting than this one, but I shouldn't reveal too much.
You're planning to do a trilogy, if I understand things, and you have are in the process of completing book number two. Book number three, do you think that will take as long as the first, the Valentine Children's Summer Adventures?
No, I'll tell you why. The hardest part of this book was developing the personalities of the children, and also dealing with the French, making sure that the French was correct. But once I have the foundation, which is the children, right now there's six children, I find that it will be very easy for a transition into the next time period.
Would you recommend this as a good book for maybe parents and grandparents to share with their children?
Absolutely, for parents and grandparents and children. It's good for anyone who wants to read about a charming fairy tale village in France and learn some French along the way. And it is the charming village that really helps too. It's just delightful. You'll see beautiful pictures of it in the book.
It is beautiful. Were there, or have there been any opportunities for you to share this publicly with a maybe a reading group or a school group, or has anyone given you any feedback on the storyline?
I did have this young girl read it a while back ago, and she loved it. And I asked her if it was too difficult regarding the French. Of course, she was highly intelligent. She speaks three languages. She said, no, not at all. But I think that I think it'll be easier if a parent reads it to the child, you know, a child, let's say, 6 or 7, and then the child will want the parent to read it again and again. And then the child hopefully will be interested in French because the story is so charming. It's the story. I think you have to make learning a language interesting. Otherwise, it's too hard for kids, especially during this age where they're involved with computers and other things like that. It's so competitive about getting ahead in school. I think that this will help them tremendously.
I've had some feedback from one of my staff members. They just absolutely adore your book and the illustrations. Of course, the staff member is also an artist, so that impressed them greatly. You've done a wonderful job with this. If you were to introduce this book to my listeners and just tell them in your own words how and why they should get a copy of this particular read.
Because it's so engaging. It's so heartfelt. It's such a treasure. So exciting. And I think that it's just one of the most delightful books. It's something everybody should read about, and it's true to form. There is a charming village in France. It looks just like a fairy tale village. And I think that everyone who goes there just says it's just absolutely divine.
Any short-term goals beyond getting this out into the public recognition?
Well, starting my second book to finish it.
Wonderful.
Right now I'm doing a lot of research on the second book. It takes time.
Look forward to talking to you about that when it's completed as well. Again, from my perspective, beautifully done illustrations. The storyline is charming, and of course the setting is spectacular. The title of the book is The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures. My guest, Diane Sabel Donahoe. Where can my listeners get a copy of your book, Diane?
My listeners could get a copy through Archway Publishing Company, also Amazon.com already has it available for sale, and there has been one review on it, and Barnes & Noble. So I guess it would be Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
They can also do a search under the title of the book, The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures, and find a copy on the Internet or at their local bookseller. They can also order it in. Let me spell for my listeners your pen name. Diane is spelled D-I-A-N-N-E. Sabel is spelled S-I-B-E-A-L, last name Donahoe. Donahoe, D-O-N-A-H-O-E. I think I've got it.
Yes, and also I have a website. It's www.Diane, D-I-A-N-N-E, and then D-O-N-A-H-O-E, altogether.com. So they can get on my website, they can see what the book looks like, and they can read maybe the first 3 pages.
Exceptional. Thank you for joining me today and sharing the background story of your adventures and how you came to write this wonderful, wonderful tale. Thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Bye.
For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Many children suffer from the challenges with attention and hyperactivity, known as ADHD. Drugs used to treat this condition, such as Ritalin, are strongly addictive. They may have an immediate calming effect, but also come with severe side effects, and they lack the positive outcomes in the long run. My guest today is the author, Dr. Harold Blomberg, who joins me to talk about his new book, titled The Rhythmic Movement Method, and to explain why he believes that rhythmic movement is more useful than drugs in treating conditions such as ADHD. Welcome to the show, Harold, and thank you for taking the time to join me. Now, first of all, could you explain briefly for our listeners exactly what ADHD is and how it affects children?
Well, that's a condition which has been invented by psychiatrists, and it deals with attention deficits, problems with attention, and problems with hyperactivity and problems with impulse control. Actually, it's diagnosed with a lot of questionnaires, and in my experience, almost any child nowadays can get this diagnosis, because most children have some of these problems. So I don't think it's... but of course, I'm aware that there are some children who have severe challenges with hyperactivity and impulse control, and they may be a burden for teachers and for parents also. But this is my simple explanation about what it is.
Now, in my brief introduction, I mentioned one of the drugs that's used for treating conditions such as ADHD, which is Ritalin, which I believe, as well as having some serious side effects, also doesn't really deal with the problem in the long term. What are your views on that?
Now, they may have an effect in the short term, and they may make the children calmer and seemingly more focused. But in the long term, there are several studies that have not been able to notice any helpful outcome from this kind of treatment. And actually, they may have negative effects in the long term. So if you are going to have this, use this treatment, I think they should be only used for short periods.
Now, you describe your book as being a revolutionary approach to improved health and well-being. Now, with your experience as a psychiatrist in Sweden, and I believe you've been teaching and you've been working with rhythmic movement training for about 30 years. How did this lead you to write the book, and what was your main motivation and inspiration behind the book?
Well, my main motivation is to tell about my experience to work with these rhythmic movements and how helpful they are. And I must say they are revolutionary to many people, because they change their lives completely. That's what I was very much impressed when I learned these movements first time, working with Kerstin Linde, who developed these exercises by observing small infants doing baby movements. And she used these exercises for children who had cerebral palsy and movement disability, and they were not able to speak, they were not able to move around, move about on the floor, they were not able to eat, and they were totally handicapped, and they were given no hope from doctors. And then I witnessed how some of these children actually learned to move about on the floor, learned to crawl, learned to walk, learned to speak. And then I had to question everything I had learned in my training to become a doctor and see that there are huge possibilities to help people. And this I have been trying to do during the last 30 years. And I must say I have been successful to some degree.
Now, when you were writing the book, you obviously had a purpose and a readership and, you know, been a help book in some respects. Who did you write the book for and who do you feel that it appeals to?
Well, I wrote the book for parents, actually, of these children who have severe handicaps, because I meet so many of these parents. I know how disappointed they are in the normal healthcare system, how little help they get, how they are not, how angry some of them are. And I wrote it to give them some hope and some alternative ways to help their children. And of course, I also wrote this book for professionals who work in the health system, because especially physiotherapists and occupational therapists can benefit very much from using these simple exercises. And I wrote it also for teachers. I would say I would be very happy if physical education teachers would read this book and apply some of the exercises, because then they could really help a lot of children, not only with motor difficulties and so on, but also with cognitive difficulties. And I wrote it for preschool teachers, kindergarten teachers, who can who would benefit. They can actually apply these exercises in preschool. So that. And last, I wrote it for anyone who wants to improve their own health and well-being, actually. Even if you function quite well, you can actually improve your health and well-being by using this simple method.
Now, what is the one thing above everything else that you would like readers of your book to learn or to take away from reading your book?
Well, I think the main focus on this book is about the importance of the spontaneous rhythmic baby movements, that they are actually necessary for developing our brain, including our motor abilities and emotions and mental faculties. So we can start to look at the job babies do. Get their brain to work by doing all these movements. And the rhythmic movement method is based on these movements. So if you haven't done these movements as a baby, it may not be too late. You can always repeat them later on. So this is what I would like the reader to know. And this is something which I think most doctors are quite unaware of, because most doctors believe that the brain creates movements and not the other way around. I think that the movements actually develops the brain.
Now tell me, in your own words, how you feel that this book differs from other books on similar topics, and what sets it apart from the crowd?
Well, I would say that there are a few books who deal with the early movement patterns of infants and the primitive reflexes also, and deal with how to integrate primitive reflexes. What is special with the rhythmic movement method is actually the rhythmic component of these movements, because Kerstin Linde was able to observe how important the rhythm is for our development of the brain, and how it makes such a strong impact and gives us such a strong stimulation to the brain. So by using the rhythm that infants spontaneously do, they very quickly can integrate reflexes. And this is why the method is so very effective to work with the older children and adults.
Now, I've mentioned earlier on that in your work as a psychiatric and also with the rhythmic movement training, you do have a lot of knowledge and experience in the topic of the book, but it still must have been a challenge for you. What did you find the most challenging and rewarding part of writing this book?
Well, since I'm a doctor, I want to explain why these movements are so important. And, of course, there was no such knowledge. I couldn't find any knowledge about these movements, that the baby movements were necessary for development of the brain. So I had to make a lot of research to construct a plausible theory about how it works, and I learned very much about it. But then I feel this has been a very rewarding project for me, because now I can explain it in a very simple way, and people can easily understand it, and it's nothing mysterious about it.
I believe that our listeners can find it more and visit you online. And would you like to give them the website addresses?
Yes, of course. My website address, there's a lot of information there in my website about blomberrmt.com. It's in English.
Now, is there anything that we haven't covered here that you feel is important and you would like listeners to know about your book?
I also would like to add now, I remember, that I'm going to the U.S. to teach people who can, instructors who can work with the rhythmic exercises. So you can find on one of the websites how to get in touch with instructors who work with these exercises. And I'm probably going to, I've written a book about autism, and I will translate it into English and publish it next year, I think.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. The book is published by Lulu and can be purchased online direct from their website at www.lulu.com and from all other good book stockists. Once again, many thanks to Harold for joining us on the show. This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Okay.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, Buzzkill, and the author is William Goodspeed, and William joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, William.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Great to have you with us. You're taking a very satirical look at the corporate world, but it may be more real than just satire.
Oh, it's very real. a lot of the chapters and stories in the book are based on true instances, maybe exaggerated a bit, and collected and organized in a plot. But yes, there's a lot of reality.
So when you first started thinking about writing this book, and it's got some interesting characters like Dr. Chen and others of you're really pushing the envelope, as you've already mentioned. You're stretching it right to the limit to make your point. So this irreverent satire, is this something that you just knew for years you needed to write? I mean, how did it all come about?
Well, I had so many instances when I was an executive running large divisions within larger companies. So many instances where something hysterically funny happened, and it would trigger a response from the corporate bureaucracy or human resources or something rule-oriented, and the tension was always there, and it was hysterical, and I started keeping notes for years and putting it into a file from various companies and instances and from personal life, and decided one day to sit down and put it together into a novel.
Now, is this company created around some company that you worked for in the past, or is it completely fiction?
This is fictional. This is a plastics company in Tennessee that I made up. I never worked in the plastics industry, and I tried to keep it away from any of the companies I actually worked for.
So give us kind of a overview, just to begin with, before we talk about some of the specifics with the characters, just kind of a overview of the storyline.
The story involves a company, division of a company, in Tennessee that faces a lot of serious problems during the Great Recession. And it hires a new president who's relatively young from the Northeast, who starts putting together a team that stars Dr. Chen, who's a Chinese immigrant PhD, and he runs their research and development. And the storyline is that this group puts together a very eclectic team from a tall, black, lesbian woman who rides a Harley Davidson and has a frohawk to the southern good old boy male. They put together a team, and they put creativity and fun in the work. And in the process, they trigger the ire of the corporate center, human resources, finance, research and development, and they keep getting in trouble because they keep violating the rules of the company. And so the story is all about this tension between their fun and creativity versus the rules. And in the end, the fun and creativity wins.
So as we pointed out already about this satirical look at the corporate world, it's not only funny, but just shows how a company that violates political correctness can achieve major success. So it sounds like you have a mission here.
Well, I do. My primary mission is to entertain and to make people laugh out loud, and people who've read it do laugh out loud. My secondary mission, the underlying point, is that we as people and as organizations need to tap the right brain in us, the fun side of us, the emotional, creative side. And if we do that and pay less attention to rules and political correctness, we can create organizations that do more than anyone can imagine. And that's been my experience in my career.
So business should be fun. If you're going to be the most creative, it needs to be fun.
It absolutely does need to be fun, and there's a lot of data out there that show the correlation between fun and employee happiness and business success.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Dr. Chen.
Dr. Chen is a very, very funny character. He comes to the U.S. as a PhD in plastics. He gets hired by Lund Plastics to run a very small research and development department. He tries to make everything Chinese when he first arrives. He tries to have oolong tea in his lab. He tries to make the lab look like a Chinese temple. He makes his own fortune cookies to give out at lunches, including very funny fortunes, and he butchers the English language consistently, particularly with plurals. He pluralizes things that are singular and vice versa. And as he spends more time in the U.S., particularly in the South, he tries to become American. So he buys a Cadillac. He has an incredible fondness for Dolly Parton, NASCAR racing and Mountain Dew, the Holy Trinity of the South, I like to call it. And he becomes this very creative, fun-loving, enabling leader. And everybody loves working with him, from the good old boys, the white male good old boys, to women and other Chinese and so on. And he creates a diverse, fun team that becomes very successful.
But at the same time, because of the conflict with the bureaucracy side of the business, it leads to mandatory sensitivity training?
Yes. What happens is his fun-loving boss goads him into making a big mistake in specifying who he wants to hire for his next scientist. And he ends up specifying that he wants a male Chinese PhD who's single, and he can't make up his mind what religion would be best or sexual preference. And his boss is doing this knowing that it's against the rules, but he's a fun-loving boss. But unfortunately, human resources gets wind of it, and they force the two of them and 20 others to take sensitivity training, a day-long course that's so bad, even Dick Cheney would consider it torture.
Well, then you also have Belinda in finance.
Yes, Belinda, whose name Trophy, is this very sultry vice president of finance. She's about 5'2" and wears low heels, has long, curly, blonde hair, and an astounding body featuring her two upper parts that are known in the office as Bonnie and Clyde.
Then you told us a little bit about Monique. Anything else about this Cajun lesbian?
Well, the Cajun lesbian who rides Harleys and shaves both sides of her head comes into the organization acting like people would expect her to act, maybe with a chip on her shoulder, but she ends up being a wonderfully positive, forgiving member of the team, and even makes friends with the white good old boy who's so outrageous he takes his customers to strip clubs and submits receipts for lap dances on cocktail napkins, which Monique has to receive. And it's a very funny story, because she's the type of person you think would hate this good old boy and vice versa, and they end up being very respectful to each other and close.
Well, we have this unique event that is going to literally, I guess, save the day, save the company.
Right.
This rollerblade scavenger hunt where everybody dresses up like a celebrity.
Yeah. So Chan takes his team of about 10 to Miami Beach for an off-site meeting, the beginning of a new product development process. And in addition to the regular meetings that he has a team-building event where he hires actually a consultant, Cher, only it's not really Cher, it's just a man who looks like Cher and dresses like Cher, except he doesn't shave his legs. And they create costumes for everybody on the team that's for celebrities. So there's Dolly Parton, there's Tom Cruise, there's former President Clinton, Hulk Hogan, and so on. They break into two teams and go out on rollerblades, and they collect from a list, like a Cuban cigar, a picture of a topless woman, autograph from a celebrity, and so on. And they ended up getting in all kinds of trouble and having all kinds of fun. And Chan eventually gets in trouble because by doing this, he's not following the corporate new product development process, starting with his failure to get Cher to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Well, it is what it is, everyone. And I read this one review, and I was so impressed as I started to read it. It says, the best novel I've read since To Kill a Mockingbird. And then it said, but I'm Bill's mom and should be supportive. So,
yeah, she's a little biased.
So mom read the book.
Yes, mom read the book, and she may have been a little ashamed at parts, but, you know, it's the price you pay.
Well, another person said, a human resource madhouse. So it sounds like you've accomplished your mission.
Right. That's right. Well, the person who did that is a is a employment lawyer in Maine, and a classmate of mine who actually thinks it's hysterical and is giving it out to her human resource clients for inspiration on how to be a good or a bad HR person.
Well, it is a twisted tale of America's corporate culture, the title Buzzkill. And we've been talking to the author, William Goodspeed. William, what's the best way to get your book?
Get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And you can also go to the website, which is buzzkillgoodspeed.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.